our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
What?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, no. I did. And I'm not ashamed to say that.
It's like I'm a philosopher here. There's no way he does this in the second half.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, Mike loves Will Myers and loves John Carlos Stanton. Mike, how are you doing?
That is not true at all. I hate Will Myers. I love Stan.
You did not go and get your free Slurpee?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You might as well put your foot in the door with your highest expectation. There's no reason to lowball yourself.
It would have been great if he had just broke his wrist. It would have been the best fucking thing ever.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 133 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good, my man. How are you? I feel like it's been too long. Been busy.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had a chance to sit down and chat with you. How are you enjoying, 7-Eleven day?
I did not get my Slurpee today, so...
You did not go and get your free Slurpee?
I did not. It's a bummer. I had one yesterday, of course, because I don't plan things out very well, so...
have you been enjoying the home run derby so far?
Yeah, I'm glad to see Stanton making an impact, finally, in some state perform this year.
Yeah, unfortunately, none of those home runs count towards fantasy.
Right.
Quick question before we jump back, jump over to Mike and he can gush about his love life with Giancarlo Stanton. What was better to watch in the beginning of the home run derby? Because we're recording Monday night. We've just finished the first round. I think the second round has just started. Was Stan's power more impressive than the fact that Will Myers' brothers beamed him?
I got a good chuckle out of that. Will Myers' brother taking him out, but especially with Will Myers, he's kind of going to get wrapped up in a little bit of a bubble wrap too. He's kind of injury prone, so how unfortunate would it be if he went on the DL pulling a muscle trying to avoid that or something?
It would have been great if he had just broke his wrist. It would have been the best fucking thing ever.
Yeah, Mike loves Will Myers, so
yeah, Mike loves Will Myers and loves Giancarlo Stanton. Mike, how are you doing?
That is not true at all. I hate Will Myers, and I love Stan, but I'm doing great, man. It's been a nice, entertaining couple of days for baseball, and especially the Futures game. I mean, I watched all of it. I loved every bit of it, especially Yoan Moncada, but Stanton put on the power show, and has been awesome as well.
Nice, nice. All right, so what's more impressive, Stanton's power or Will Myers' brother plunking him?
Definitely Stanton's power. I wish that he, like, lined a ball right back at him, although it probably wouldn't have hit him since they have that little net there, but... Fuck Will Myers' brother.
I'm surprised you're not saying fuck Will Myers, but, you know, to each his own.
But fuck the Myers.
The whole clan, huh?
Yeah, just that is a jilted Rays fan right there. Joining us tonight is an illustrious guest, first time on our podcast, my buddy Alex Chamberlain from Fangraphs. Alex, how are you doing?
Doing all right, man. How are you?
Good. Have you had the chance to watch much of the Derby tonight?
I've had zero chance to watch the Derby, and I've had zero chance to watch the Futures game. So, as always, I'm living up to my reputation as a sterling analyst.
Well, at least you got the beard to make up for it.
Alex, why don't you tell people kind of where they can reach you on Twitter or social media, and then a little bit about yourself and what you do.
This is always a struggle because I made such a dumb Twitter handle, but it's Dolph Haldhagen, spelled DolphHaldhagen. Dolph Haldhagen. Not even going to explain why I did that. You can find me on Fangraphs. I also write once a week at RotoBaller. What was the third part of that question? What do I write about? I don't know. I write about all sorts of things. I did some ADP research early on in the year, which was just kind of spur of the moment, and it kind of snowballed into something bigger than I thought. I'm on the National League outfield beat at Fangraphs, which is the counterpart to what Justin does, and of course we both love that.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just kind of digressed into writing mostly profiles about players. I was doing a lot more like statistical, like regression analysis kind of stuff when I first started. And then I just found out that I don't have time. So I've had more fun doing profiles and like feature kind of pieces and that. And that's, I think that's been more fun anyway. So I kind of am all over the place. But yeah.
Well, and you are a Fantasy Sports Writers Association Award winner too, right? Did you win New Writer of the Year?
I 2015. Yeah, I won New Writer of the Year last year, and I was a finalist for Baseball Writer of the Year. That was pretty cool. I didn't expect either of those things, so it was cool to be recognized or even nominated to begin with. So.
Yeah, so Alex definitely knows his shit. Definitely go follow him on Twitter. Hit him up for questions and things like that, because you don't have enough followers on Twitter. I mean, I think you've got less followers than me, which is an absolute fucking crime.
I've got like 450 or something like that, which is, it's better than the like 80 that I had up until like February before the awards happened. So those help.
It's about 20 less Pokemon than Justin's probably caught.
I don't even get I don't even understand.
I don't either, man.
What the Pokemon thing is? So, like, I am like the least cool person, like not just on this podcast, but just in general. So I have no idea what the Pokemon thing is for, nor do I want to.
All I know is it's causing accidents. That's all I know. It's ruining
and armed robberies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's get away from Pokemon, though. We're going to jump into our list of topics. But before we do, just want to remind everybody we are sponsored by OfficialFantasyRings.com. Go and get your championship rings for your fantasy leagues at OfficialFantasyRings.com. Use our promo code FWFB and get 10% off at checkout. You're able to show off your rings all season long. Don't have to carry around a trophy. Don't have to carry around a belt. Make your friends kiss your ring when you dominate them in your fantasy baseball or fantasy football leagues. OfficialFantasyRings.com. Again, use our promo code FWFB for 10% off at checkout. All right, let's go ahead and jump into our first set of questions. These are both kind of focusing on Dynasty Keeper leagues. You know, we're going to start talking about, like, if you're rebuilding, what kind of players are you looking to try to acquire? Are you leaning more towards prospects? Are there certain prospects you really want to go after? Or are you looking for injured players? We'll start with you, Matt, being our prospect guy. Who are you looking to acquire if you're rebuilding in a dynasty or keeper league?
Well, I mean, you always have to be looking to acquire talent in general. But, I mean, a certain couple prospects that I'm trying – that I think if it's going to be a long rebuild, I'm trying to get Victor Robles and guys of that ilk. But like, if I'm trying to just retool and maybe reload for next year, there's a lot of like post-hype guys. Maybe you could find a frustrated Michael Conforto owner, or like a frustrated Colton Wong, or even Randall Grichuk owner like that. He might be willing to give him up for pennies compared to what he paid preseason or whatever, you know. A lot of post-hype guys like that. Maybe even Austin Hedges, Mike Zunino. Guys like that are kind of left for dead, putting up decent numbers now in the minor leagues and getting major league cups of coffee. But you just have to be going for talent. I like a lot of post-hype sleeper bats, and that's what I'd be going for. But, yeah, you just always keep your eyes and ears down looking for, you know, big-time talent, and that's what you need to be doing at all times. And if you're out of it, get some prospects. If you think you can reload, go after some of the guys I mentioned earlier.
Alex, who are you looking to kind of add if you're a team that's rebuilding in a keeper or dynasty league?
I guess it depends on how long that rebuild is. As you mentioned, I think guys who are pretty close, like Manuel Margot on the Padres, Charlie Tilson on the Cardinals. I don't know if they have a room for him, but you know, he's there. I just ruined my mic. He's knocking on the door. Pitchers. I mean, I don't know, like 8 Dodgers pitchers, De Leon, Cotton, Urias is already up. I like the play of looking at the beleaguered guys who have already gotten a cup of coffee, because Conforto has a great skill set. Piscotty's already established himself, and Grichuk isn't bad either. Those guys are just getting in a little bit of trouble with BABIP. That's really all it is right now. And they have like 20, 25 homer power easy. So I think it's just a matter of finding the right person who is disgruntled enough to give up like a decent trade ship at a low price too.
Mike, who are you looking to target if you're rebuilding? I mean, I know you're rebuilding probably for, you know, a few years in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League. But if you're looking to rebuild, whether quick or short, or quick or long term, who are guys that you would like to target?
Yeah, I love a lot of the recommendations that these guys have already said, Conforto being my favorite one in particular. I think Jorge Soler is somebody that people are just completely forgetting about. He might get moved at some point, regardless of the situation for him. His power is legit, and I've always believed in the talent. Now, he is kind of a knucklehead, and he has had the propensity to get injured recently for sure. But I think overall the talent is still very high for him, and he's still very, very young. You know, and he's somebody that, you know, since he hasn't been playing this year and he should have been getting a shot, that I think people are just kind of forgetting about. I would definitely try and buy low on Greg Bird, somebody that I've been very vocal about this year. I think people are also forgetting about him, kind of like Miguel Sano, what was it, the year before last when he went through his Tommy John surgery and people just kind of left him for dead for a bit. I know a lot of people that kind of capitalized on that. And, you know, you guys also touched on a great point. Just, you know, guys that have already gotten a cup of coffee that have already kind of been bad since they've been up. You know, Jose Berrios is a guy that, you know, was terrible when he came up to the majors, but he's somebody that's, you know, getting the command in check, and, you know, all the skills are really, really solid for him. And if you're able to buy him at a price that's less than, you know, top 50 starter worthy in dynasty leagues, I would pounce on that in a second. You know, there's a number of guys, but really I'm looking for players that people are just a little bit sour on that still have a plethora of talent and that can really do, you know, pay dividends in the long term.
Yeah, one of the things you guys didn't really mention is, and one of the things I like to do, and one of the reasons I turned around last season in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, going from 20th the year before to first last season, was I like this time of year, I really like to target guys who are out for the season or out for long stretches, just hit the DL. Nobody mentioned Kyle Schwarber. Nobody mentioned AJ Pollock, two guys done for the season. Right, you know, if you're not competing this year, but you want a quick turnaround, those are two guys that should be back, you know, by the beginning of next season with probably little to no effect from the injuries this season. Mike Moustakas is another guy who will be back next season and should be fine. Those are the kind of guys that I really like, because you know that they're going to produce at the major league level, as opposed to some of the, you know, it's always fun to go out and get the prospects, but we just don't really know how they're going to adjust. We think we know, we can try to project, we can, you know, prognosticate all we want. But, I mean, look at Buxton. We all thought, or a lot of people thought Buxton was going to be just a, you know, surefire, you know, all pro. And he has not yet shown that. And it's now been a few years in the making. So I really like going after the injury guys. Matt Carpenter is a guy I would go after, just went on the DL. Kershaw is a guy I would try to go after, you know, guy who's going to miss at least all of July, maybe, you know, into August. Anybody who's going to be injured for a little while or is out for the rest of the season are guys I love to target. And on that note, why don't we talk about, you know, some guys and where their potential trade value is in that kind of regard. Matt Harvey's done for the year. If you are on the other side of the coin and you are, you know, trying to win a championship this year, for instance, Matt is trying to win a championship this year, Mike, who would you try to get for a guy like Matt Harvey, for a guy like AJ Pollock or Kyle Schwarber, if you're more concerned winning now?
If I'm trying to win now, I want, you know, stability. So, I, you know, a guy like Jose Quintana, I think is a perfect fit, you know, because he's been a solid pitcher through and through for multiple years now, and he's going to add that stability to my team. And at the same time, I will lose some upside in the long run with somebody like Matt Harvey. But again, you know, Quintana, I think you will add that just, you know, stability to my rotation that I lost with somebody like Matt Harvey, except for this year, who he's been absolutely hideous. you know, and I would even go a little bit less than that, you know, because if I'm trying to win this year, I need to add something in the pitching realm that's going to help me out. You know, I would go even for a Samardzija, even though I really don't care for him. I would rather take the production the rest of the way, even a Masahiro Tanaka, somebody of that nature, just somebody to get me through the rest of the way that I think could be a top, you know, 40 starter. That way I maintain production in that category.
Alex, do you agree with Mike, or do you tend to hold out for more from guys like that?
If I was contending, I would sell. And I think Tanaka is probably a perfect comp. Quintana is always underrated, so you could probably get him at that price. It sucks for Harvey because he's been terrible up until the injury, so trying to pawn him off on someone else is going to depend entirely on their perception of him, as opposed to someone like Kluber, who is excellent at all times. But yeah, no, I would sell. I wouldn't sit on him. If I'm going to win now, I'm going to win now. So I'm not going to hold on to a piece that's going to flounder on the bench and, you know, replace him with something on the waiver wire who is suboptimal relative to what Harvey could net me in return. And I think that's just the premise, is you have to be thinking in the now at all times. You just got to be considering, if you are contending, you just have to contend. And you have to make a long-term sacrifice for the short-term benefit.
Matt, where are you at on this? Are you in agreement with Alex and Mike?
Yeah, I am. And like one thing that's like kind of in dynasty leagues that kind of gets thrown to the wayside, like don't be afraid to, if you're in the mix of things, obviously you're not going to get like a John Lackey because he's doing well, but an older starter like that, don't be afraid to like kind of piggybacking off what Mike said with stability. Grab an older starter that is solid and that's going to be around another year or two. And if you have that window, I don't know, like the league we're in, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, I acquired like Lance Lynn as a throw-in in one of the smaller deals I made earlier this year with full intention of, you know, he's going to have a rotation spot next year for the Cardinals. And that's kind of the, he's not the older player, but he's kind of like, that's kind of the move you need to make. But I still think Matt Harvey, you could probably deal him. Could you get Matt Harvey in a lesser prospect for like a David Ortiz owner? I mean, Would someone do that?
Could. Yeah. I mean, especially if the David Ortiz owner isn't competing this year, you know, what is he going to get out of him going forward? Nothing. So you might as well take anything he can get. You could probably get Ortiz for less than Matt Harvey, but I think Harvey would be a fair offer.
Yeah. I mean, stuff like that is worth considering. I mean, flags fly forever, right? No matter what, Harvey might give you 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah. And that's always been my mantra on this podcast. And in real life is I don't really care about the future necessarily. I want to win now. I want my, you know, championship ring now, you know, trophy or whatever you guys use to commemorate your victories. I want the bragging rights forever because nobody remembers, like, you know, for instance, Mike and Matt, do you guys remember who finished second place in the Dynasty League last year?
No.
Nope.
Exactly. So we're not even we're not even a year removed, but I will make you guys – I will not let you guys ever forget that I won the championship last year. But we're already removed. Nobody remembers who second place was. So don't worry about second place. You know, glory lives on forever. Go out and win now and do whatever it takes to do that.
I think, you know, watching my strategy in this league, particular league, I unloaded almost every – I had every top prospect. Now Mike has them. I unloaded them all. I might have been giving up. I made the first initial trade with Mike acquiring Jose Fernandez, and that kind of pushed me toward the edge. I was willing to give up a package of guys that I probably didn't get as much value as I could, but I was all in, going for it. You know what I mean? So I kind of had to. It wouldn't have done me any good to stop short of just selling off my prospects to get pieces to go all in. And especially in the middle of the season, you need to keep that foot down and keep going in that direction. If I had more prospects to sell, I would be selling them right now. But I unfortunately blew my load a little bit, so to speak.
Well, you have Kyle Schwarber, so you and I will be talking after the podcast.
Absolutely. He's very available. Very available.
Let's go ahead and move on to our list of players. Let's talk about the Boston bullpen situation. Kimbrel is injured, is going to miss a few weeks. They acquire Brad Ziegler from the Diamondbacks, and they still have Koji Urahara, you know, Hembree, a couple other guys. Who is the closer for the next few weeks with Kimbrel out? Alex, what are your thoughts on the Boston bullpen situation?
beats me, man. I would say, honestly, I'm not happy to be answering this question. I think it's going to be both of them. I think Ziegler might prevail, and it's obviously great timing with Kimbrel going down. But, you know, Uehara has proven himself to be effective, even if flawed. I think they're going to end up probably splitting it like 60-40. I don't think it's going to be like a very clean cut. Unless one of them like implodes right away, I think this is going to be kind of like a, you know, a little bit of a convoluted mess.
So if, let's say both Ziegler, you're in a 12-team league, Ziegler isn't out there, but Uehara is. How much money would you spend on Uehara in FAB? Are you like 5% of your FAB, or are you really just, you know, if you can get them for cheap, you'll take them. If not, you're not going to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. So the guys who split time in the closer role while they're waiting for someone to come back from the DL, I typically don't devote a lot of resources to that because it's just such a spotty. First of all, it's a dart throw. Second of all, it's temporary. And by the time, you know, when Kimbrel comes back in 6 weeks, maybe Uehara gets like, what, 4 or 5 saves tops. Ziegler gets the same. So I don't really know if it's worth it. So typically, I'll like the same thing with Kelvin Herrera and Joaquin Soria in Kansas City. I backed away from that situation as well because it looks like Herrera has prevailed. But it's just, to me, it's not worth the hassle. It's nice to pick up a few saves here and there, but in the end, is it going to be worth it? Am I going to need that budget for a key acquisition later? It's just not worth the hassle to me, but I'm one man, so I don't know.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Is Uehara or Ziegler worth an add? Are you kind of steering away from them, maybe going after Herrera in Kansas City?
Well, I prefer Herrera over the Red Sox, any of the Red Sox guys. I just think he's the better pitcher, and I think Herrera, even in a 12-team mixed, can have some value just because of the case he gets as a setup man. I think Uehara is the guy in Boston. I think Ziegler's the better pitcher, and I think that's kind of will hurt him, I think, because Ziegler will kind of come into the situations where they need a big double play and a big out here, big ground ball from, you know, going from Bogarts and Bogarts and Pedroia should help him out. I mean, I know Nick Ahmed was good, but Segura isn't that great at second base. So I think the infield defense will definitely help Ziegler a little bit in Boston, and I think he kind of becomes the fireman kind of role. But I think it's Uehara, but like Alex said, you can't really invest much in a temporary closer because, especially one with Uehara, who's, what is he, 41, I think? You can't imagine.
Yeah, sounds about right.
You can't imagine he's going to be working back-to-back days that much. I mean, I see his last two outings were back-to-back. He got two saves against Mike's Rays. But I think I could get a save against the Rays. But
you had to add the last part. You couldn't.
I did. Just to get under your skin there. But anyways, Uehara, man, I think he's the guy you have to own. But Alex sums it up perfectly. I'm not really spending too much on him. Maybe 5% of my FAB, only because it's so close to the end of the year. And there might not be much else to spend it on if you need saves, but I'm not going crazy.
Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
I worry about the injury for Kimbrel, and he already wasn't pitching as good as, you know, he has been in the past, which we kind of predicted on this podcast at least. But I mean, man, I think that Uehara is the guy that is going to have the actual quote unquote closer role. For now, at least. I mean, they're very different pitchers, Ziegler and Uehara, even though they both have like somewhat the same velocity. Matt kind of touched on it. You know, Ziegler has that immense ground ball rate, 60+, you know, percent over the last few years here, which means that he can easily get double play balls. And, you know, somebody like Uehara is more of a strikeout guy. He has at least 2 strikeouts in like every one of his outings over the last, you know, 8 or 9. So, I mean, he's getting in there, maintaining the strikeouts. He doesn't blow up too often. I think Uehara is the guy. The question question about Fab, I would go a little bit higher because I think it's definitely going to be 6 weeks for Kimbrel. It could be more. And when he does come back, are they going to put him in that role immediately, or is it going to take time after that? So if you're giving me, you know, close to 2 months of a Red Sox closer, you know, especially going down the stretch here of the season, you know, I would be willing to go more than 10% on Uehara. I think I would go, you know, 12-13%, and I would feel okay about it. With that said, I would definitely go more for Herrera from Kansas City, but I don't think he's out there at all because of the fact that, you know, they've been, you know, Wade Davis has been out for a little while, and he's coming back relatively soon. So overall, I would go a little bit higher for Uehara, probably like 13-14%. And, you know, I think that Ziegler will end up having the higher leverage situations.
Yeah, I would probably rather have Uehara than Herrera if I'm looking for saves. Because, like you said, I think Wade Davis is going to be back fairly quickly. And I think Uehara will get that job. One, he's a known commodity to that organization and to the management there. So they know what they're going to get from he's closed games in Boston before. You know, Ziegler is moving from the, you know, vaunted National League West to the American League East, which may not be the best of transitions. I think that Uehara is probably the guy, and I think he's got the job for longer because I am a little bit worried about Kimbrel. Alex, are you worried about Kimbrel rest of the season?
All I have to go on are the reports from Roto World and, you know, all of these outlets, and it makes it sound like it's only going to be 6 weeks and it's not that bad, but that could just be the PR spin too. So honestly, I don't know. I mean, I'm not worried because I don't own him in any leagues, but if I did own him in leagues, I would absolutely be getting a share of Uehara or Ziegler or both, just to be sure, and cross my fingers that he's back late August, I guess. Is that 6 weeks? I can't count. but yeah, I mean, you have to be concerned. But I'm not going to let the concern dictate my Fab budget spending or, you know, lead to an irrational decision. Let's put it that way.
Do the situations with a lot of these closers this year, are they going to change you guys' strategy next year going into drafts with closers? Like, I mean, like high value guys, like preseason, like Rosenthal has struggled and Kimbrel getting hurt. The surrounding,
so, but you still you have, know, you've had a fair share of other guys like Kenley Jansen, Zach Britton, Juris Familia, Mark
sure.
Morris,
yeah.
And all of them.
I think it's been one of the better years for kind of the upper half of closers. So I probably won't adjust my strategy, but I was willing to spend on the guys that I liked, and those are the guys that have, you know, for the most part, kept their jobs. So it's not going to affect my strategy or my rankings next year, but I could see why it would affect other people's. Alex, what about you? Are you going to adjust your relief pitching strategy next season based on what we've seen this year?
I've actually adjusted it a couple years back based on this situation alone. So what I do is I buy the three cheapest relievers on the board, essentially. I wait till the very end, and I buy Fernando Rodney for $2. I buy Jeremy Jeffress for $2. And I buy whoever that other guy was that I bought.
Santiago Casilla, probably, or something
probably.
Like that.
Guys who get replaced easily, but you just have to be diligent about picking up the replacements if they flounder in the role. I ended up getting Madsen on waivers at one point. I ended up getting Maurer. I have Maurer right now. So I kind of just like, I pick up the scraps. That's my strategy. I don't even invest in the big guys anymore because they have decimated my strategy time and again. And I do a better job of just kind of like, I try to invest my resources in reliable commodities, get some scrappy, crappy relievers. And if they blow up, I have the free agent budget to kind of mitigate, you know, like diffuse that situation. So it's not going to change my strategy, but it has impacted my strategy in the past.
All right. We kind of mentioned a little bit about Herrera already. Anybody else want to jump in on Herrera before we move on to some hitters?
I just want to say Herrera was probably owned in a lot of 12-team mixers anyways, before probably Wade Davis went down. I know Eli likes to use the strategy of getting a lot of setup guys to build up his ratios, and I think that's a worthwhile strategy in a 12-team league where you might be streaming a lot of guys. So, I mean, if you got lucky and had him there, that's great. Would you – I mean, well, I know Wade Davis is coming back soon, but would you – if you had, like, a Herrera, would you be interested in selling him off? Like, or would you have sold him off when Davis got to close the job?
I would have sold him off the moment he got the job. That's, I didn't have Herrera in any leagues because exactly I felt pretty comfortable about Wade Davis's grip on the role. Though, I mean, I guess we should be a little worried – maybe at least long term about Wade Davis, considering he has had a Tommy John before. He's out of like kind of the Tommy John grace period window. So, you know, maybe he's a guy that if you're rebuilding in a dynasty league or keeper league, you may want to start looking at selling once he comes back and reestablish himself in the role, because maybe this is going to turn into a reoccurring thing for Wade Davis. But yeah, in terms of Herrera, I would have sold him the moment that he got the job. Let's move on to Melvin Upton, who is having a pretty remarkable kind of turnaround season. Already has 16 home runs, 20 stolen bases, is hitting for .262 average, and really just kind of quietly for the most part, putting in a fantastic season. Alex, what are your thoughts on Melvin Upton going forward? Is this sustainable? Is this a guy to sell, or are you just riding hot streak?
So I have to deal with this guy once a month at Fangraphs. And I think I ranked him fourth among National League outfielders. And that's
wow.
Because,
what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I did. And I'm not ashamed to say that because, look, I mean, if you look at his batted ball profile, maybe he is a little over his head in terms of power. But you know, we can reel back that forecast. Maybe he only hits like 8 home runs rest of the season, maybe only 6. But if you consider that paces out to like a 25 homer, 35 steal, 80 runs and RBIs apiece campaign, even with a .250 average, those are the kinds of guys that went like top 50 in this draft. We're talking like AJ Pollock, Lorenzo Cain, Starling Marte was like up there. Those guys are all top 50 commodities. And so I think if we're reducing it to National League outfielders by themselves, I think Upton belongs in the top 5 conversation because he is contributing to at least 4 categories. And he's hitting well enough so that he's actually hitting to all fields and not popping up, which is enough to keep his BABIP in, you know, a nice territory. Even if it's going to come down a little bit, it's not going to be as bad as it was in years past. And I think he can hit .250 with 25 home runs and 35 stolen bases.
Wow. Mike, you have seen a ton of BJ Upton. You know, probably have seen a lot less of him since he's now Melvin Upton and in San Diego. But yeah, I mean, you saw him coming up with the Rays organization. He's a guy who has changed his approach so many times, it's actually impossible to count the amount of times he's changed his approach and his swing. What are your thoughts on Melvin Upton going forward?
Yeah, I don't buy this at all. I mean, I agree that he has made steps to improve his game, and by all means, you know, I mean, I've always rooted for him, and I'm happy that he's doing this. But he's walking less. He's striking out about the same as he's done in his whole entire career. I mean, he has over a 30% strikeout rate. Like, at some point, you know, and only a 6% walk rate, at some point the plate skills are going to catch up with him. You know, the BABIP, I'm not even worried about. It's the fact that, you know, if you continue to strike out, at some point you're going to hit less than .260, which he hasn't done since 2008. So, I mean, I just don't believe it. I think that he's certainly has always possessed the ability to hit for power, which we've seen, but he's also getting an outrageous amount of stolen base opportunities. I think the Padres could easily trade him. Maybe they don't, but I mean, at the end of the day, there's no way. I mean, it's like I'm a philosopher here. There's no way he does this in the second half. No, I mean, I don't think that he hits another, you know, 10 home runs. I think that you're looking at, you know, 5 to 8 range, which is, I think, feasible. And, you know, stolen base wise, depending if he stays with the Padres the rest of the year, I will say that there is the chance that he can steal another 20 bases because, again, they're not going to be competing. They'll let him do whatever the hell he wants. But in terms of the plate skills and the power and the batting average, those are all going to go down. And you definitely cannot expect this the rest of the way. I would say 240 average the rest of the way, which would about equate to a 250 on the season. And then, you know, another 5 to 8 home runs. And depending on where he goes or if he stays with the Padres, the stolen bases will probably still be there.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Melvin Upton going forward?
This is a weird career path, man. I think he's pretty much putting up a mirror image season of his 2012 with his last season in Tampa. I mean, the batting average is up about 15 points from then, which in turn makes the OBP up, but the slugging percentage is exactly the same. He had 28 homers that year, stole 31 bags. I mean, I don't anticipate the 28 homers this year, but it's a very eerily similar season to that, and I think if San Diego does not trade him, I think they're doing themselves a disservice because I think there's got to be a contender out there that needs an outfielder like this. But, like, it's this Upton family is weird, man. I keep envisioning, like, Upton family Christmas party where, like, they have this baseball, and it's kind of like Space Jam, and Melvin steals Justin's powers or something, man, because it's ridiculous. It's like if you look at their stat lines, you would there's no one in the world that would guess that this is Melvin's and that's Justin's if you put them side by side. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's crazy to me, but it's not. I think he can kind of keep it up for the rest of the season. I mean, he's done this before in 2012. I know it's weird. I know he's 31 now. Maybe he just likes no expectations in playing for a bad club. I mean, maybe he, I don't know. It's really strange to me. I wish I had better analysis for this. I mean, the batted ball data, nothing really jumps off the page for me. The home run per fly ball is a little high. Mike touched on the walking a little less, striking out more, but I think that's kind of the strikeouts are just kind of the norm across the league right now going up, but it's crazy. And I think for a fantasy, I would hold. But for San Diego, I think they need to deal him.
Well, if he likes low expectations in a bad club, maybe we can get him to come on the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you do make a good point though, Alex, about the, you know, the pop-ups. He only has 6% pop-ups right now. Last season was at 21%. You know, the season before that was almost 11%. Then the season before that was 19%. So I mean, he's definitely done something to improve that because an infield pop-up is essentially
he changed his swing. I mean, yeah. he mechanically changed his swing. And it's showing. The issue with Upton in his history is he's done this before. He's changed his swing. He's changed his approach before. And then if he goes through any sort of cold streak, he goes right back to his crappy mechanics.
Well, that's coming.
You know? And so it's kind of like a ticking time bomb in a way. So I think I would probably sell. But I don't have a problem with people riding a hot streak either because, I mean, he's only 70% owned in Yahoo leagues. I mean, which is absolutely insane. This guy's on pace for, you know, almost a 30-40 season, you know, just shy of a 30-40 season. So, I mean, I think if I could get good value for him, I would. But I also question what kind of value what his perceived value is on the trade market. I doubt you could get a top 100 player for him. So if you can't get a top 75, top 100 player for him, then you might as well just ride it, you know, as long as it'll go.
That's funny that you mentioned
that's
that.
That's my thought process, exactly.
I mean, his ownership rate tells everything. He's only 70% owned, and he's been, a top 10 player on the season? Mm-hmm. I think that just cuts so deep to the fact that he is despised. He is despised for what he's done to fantasy teams for the last 3 years.
He's burned people. He's burned people.
Yeah, and nobody trusts him. And frankly, like, I don't trust him either. Like, I'm not happy to say that I think he's going to finish with, like, a 25-35 season. But it is what it is. Like, he can keep this up. He's been playing over his head. He'll slow down, but he'll crawl his way to 25-35. And even if he has to limp to the end, he'll still be worth his weight in gold in stolen bases because everyone who picked him up this year got him on the cheap anyway. So you can't even really complain about what you're getting from him. I wouldn't try to trade him because you're not going to get anything either. You're going to get exactly what we heard on, you know, just 2 minutes ago is that he's just an up or not just him. Wow. That's a Freudian slip, I guess. He is, you know, he's BJ. He's BJ being BJ.
Alex, so. I got to ask you something. So you said he's your fourth-rated outfielder in NL, correct?
Something like that, yeah.
So you put him above, like, Gregory Polanco.
Gregory Polanco was sixth, I think.
Odubel Herrera, so, Marcelo Ozuna, Charlie Blackman.
Blackman was seventh. Ozuna was 10th. I mean, they're all, like,
they're all in the
all
same
kind
tier.
Of a cluster. Yeah. I wouldn't say that he's, like, definitively better, but just the fact that, like, he might hit for the same power as Ozuna, and Ozuna will hit for a little bit more average, but when you toss in, like, 30, 35 steals, it's a no-brainer. Like, you don't want to think about it, and you don't want to even know that it's Melvin Upton, but the fact that he's stealing 35 bases, or he will steal, you know, 30 to 35 bases, is really the only reason that we're having this conversation.
And that's exactly right. I mean, this year, fantasy home runs are way up. Home runs are way easier to find. It's getting increasingly more difficult to find a 35 stolen base guy, and that's exactly so.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to call you out or anything. I'm just kind of like going through the NL outfield, and I'm like, okay. I mean, and I get it. You know, with the stolen bases,
you've obviously never read the comments of those sections, because tearing you apart.
Well, no, I respect your opinion, and I understand why. I just was looking for the reason you gave it. So, I mean, everybody thinks differently, and honestly, if he goes out and steals another 20 bases in the second half, nobody can really argue with that. I mean, a guy that hits 20 to 25 bombs with 40 stolen bases, even if he hits 250, is still at least a top 10 NL outfielder, probably more, you know?
Right. And I think a key consideration here is that this is like a strictly redraft rank.
Yeah.
If you offered me Gregory Polanco or Charlie Blackman or Marcelo Zuna or literally anyone else, I would take him. Even if I think Melvin will outperform them for the rest of the year, because I do not trust him to do this again next year. So I will take basically anyone, like the next 10 or 12 National League outfielders after him, if I know that it's going to help my club in the future and I'm not necessarily contending, because I got Melvin for so cheap this year and he is just not a trustworthy commodity.
It's a really good point.
All right, let's move on to Noah Syndergaard, who is had another bout of his elbow flaring up, or arm issues, dead arm. What are your thoughts, Mike, on Syndergaard kind of going forward for the rest of the season? What is your level of concern?
If we're going like one being I'm not concerned at all, and 10 being I'm like way, way concerned, I'm at like a 9. Because like for the first 14 starts of the year for him, he gave up 3 runs or more twice. And the last 4 starts for him, he's given up 3 runs or more 3 of the 4 times. So, and on top of that, we're seeing a little bit of a velocity dip. On top of that, we have seen him 2 of the last 3 starts leave early with an arm problem. So, I mean, I'm not one that likes to jump quickly to somebody, you know, having some type of major problem based on, you know, 1 or 2 starts. But this is becoming a theme, and I really don't feel comfortable with it. I don't own him anywhere, but if I did, there's really nothing you can do. It's not like you can trade him off, because people know about this and people are obviously, you know, worried about it themselves. I mean, unless you got some type of deal where you're still getting a top 10 starter, then you have to kind of hold. But I will say I'm extremely worried. I think that the Mets, you know, especially with Harvey going down, they, you know, need Syndergaard, and, you know, they'll definitely push that envelope. I don't think they'll push it to where it's going to be, you know, a hindrance to his health long term. But, you know, Syndergaard seems like the type of guy that will hide some things because he wants his team to win, and I really am worried about this situation becoming bigger than it actually is.
I'm going to disagree with you in terms of I don't think there's anything that you can do. I think what we saw last time when he had the elbow issue and went out is, you know, everybody panicked, but as soon as he came back and delivered a good start, everybody's like, oh, he's fine. You know, and I think if he does that, he's scheduled to be the kind of the fifth starter after the restarting of the rotation to kind of give him an extra few days coming off of the All-Star break. If he comes back on that first start or first 2 starts and delivers a good game, no injury problems, I'm selling. And I do have a couple shares of Noah Syndergaard. One's in a keeper league, so I won't be selling that one. But one's in a redraft, and as much as I think I need starting pitching in that league, I think I'm going to try to move him if he can come back and deliver a start or 2.
What are you trying to get for him? If you don't mind, like, what's your target?
You know, maybe like a Carrasco.
Salazar, Kluber.
Yeah, Cueto, Salazar, Carlos Martinez. You know, so a pitcher that is still in the upper echelon, but hasn't
maybe
been
tier
as dominant. Yeah, so someone maybe a tier below that I feel comfortable. Yeah, John Lester, you know, a guy that you've mentioned a couple times is a guy who isn't, or a John Lackey, you know, guys that aren't necessarily putting up eye-popping numbers, but I know the rest of the season are going to deliver counting stats, which is important, especially at this time of the year. Alex, what are your thoughts on Syndergaard rest of the way?
So I think he was due a little bit for this kind of regression because he was posting. He had a strand,
unbelievable like, numbers.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's an unbelievable pitcher, and I think he can actually post an 11 K per nine with a 1.5 walks per nine. Like that is entirely within the realm of reason. But he was stranding like 85% of runners. So he was bound to give up some runs at some point. The fact that he has walked three hitters twice in the last three games and didn't do it once all season before that, that's the alarm bell for me. I mean, obviously there's elbow woes there, and he's battling through something, but this is not just like a rough patch. This is like a legitimate concern, and obviously it's a legitimate concern because they're making a thing about it. But I agree with Mike in that this is something that I think he'll try to push through to help his team and just kind of like wear it. He'll wear it, and it could be a detriment to him. If I'm going to try to sell him, I'm going for the biggest return I can get, which is Scherzer. You know, I'm of the mindset that if you're going to try to trade a guy like Syndergaard, you might as well put your foot in the door with your highest expectation. There's no reason to lowball yourself. If the guy doesn't want to trade Scherzer, then he doesn't want to trade Scherzer. Then you take it down a notch. Then you go for Kluber or Carrasco. But Syndergaard might legitimately be the heir to Kershaw's throne at this point as the best pitcher in the game, if Kershaw ever decides to decline, which he may not. He might just be the best pitcher, you know, until 2045. And that's fine. That could be the thing. But then Syndergaard would be the second best pitcher for a long time, too. I think he has that capacity. It's just a matter of, again, it comes down to, are you competing now or are you rebuilding? If I was rebuilding, I would hold on to Syndergaard. If I needed to contend right now, I would trade him, but I would absolutely go for the biggest return I could get, and I would be very diligent about that because he's such a good pitcher and he's so young that he makes for a great dynasty piece.
All right, Matt, why can't the Mets have nice things?
That is an incredible question, man. Steven Matz, they do have Bartolo Colon. So
yeah, that is the highlight of the Mets season right there. that home run in San Diego is an utter shame that he didn't get to hit in the Derby. I'm hoping he comes in for a pinch hit appearance at some point tomorrow.
Hey, you never know. Terry Collins is managing, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. You know. Tied game, right. Bottom of the ninth, and Cologne up to bat.
As a Cardinal fan, I'd be kind of angry if I saw that, because I mean, I'm holding out slim chances that they can make on here, but get that home field advantage. But anyways, Syndergaard, I think Mike is right. I don't know how many diligent owners are going to actually be buying him right now.
No, but Justin's strategy is right, though. Like, if he comes back this next start here and he
I'm on board with
jam,
that. Yeah,
you can possibly sell him, you know?
I'm on board with that. I kind of view him as a ticking time bomb. I mean, I'm not trying to buy him anywhere either. He's kind of – I have the same philosophy with, like, Tanaka. And I'm sure I'm wrong. And I'm sure, you know, it's a hindrance to myself to – cross those guys off my list in redraft short right away, but I just don't feel like dealing with the potential. The next pitch could be the last one. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's a big headache to deal with, especially with how high you're going to have to take Syndergaard, like, even next season in redraft. You know.
But all right,
we'll see.
Let's move real quick on to Alex Bregman, who had a pretty great game in the All-Star Futures game on Sunday. Went 3-for-5, had a double and a triple, And just, I mean, his swing is just a sight to behold. I know that Matt and Mike are big prospect guys, so and both are pretty high on Bregman. Matt, what are your thoughts on Bregman going forward? Is he going to get a call-up? Is this a guy to stash in redraft leagues?
I think you can. I don't know, because Luis Valbuena is kind of still hitting the ball right now. So I think, I mean, so I guess they could still move Valbuena to first and put Bregman at third base and kind of do it that and go that route. But the way the Astros have handled him, Bregman was playing shortstop and then moved to third base in Double A. They called him up to Triple A and, you know, let him get used to Triple A pitching. And so they did that, and they also put him back at his natural position, a shortstop, so he could adjust. But he's not playing third base yet in Triple A. And my my thought here is, how are they going to integrate him in third base in the major leagues? Because they seem to want him to get his feet wet at every level by playing his most comfortable position and letting him hit. Obviously, he's not going to play short barring an injury, which would be terrible for the Astros with Correa. But it's very interesting to see, and I'm kind of leaning toward the camp that if he's not up in the next week or two, I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't till September, to be honest.
Yeah, does that make sense? I'm of the opinion that he's not going to be up anytime soon. That he's probably a September call up, and it's the position that worries me. He hasn't played third base yet at AAA, like you said. He's only even played 11 games at third base at AA.
Yep.
I think he'd be a great fit in that lineup, and I think if he can show that he can, you know, hit at the major league level, that he would be a mainstay at third base for them. But they're not bringing him up as a shortstop. They have Correa. There's no sense in bringing him up if he can't handle the hot corner. So I think that he needs to prove that first before they're going to be willing to call him up. I don't think he comes up before September. And so I don't think outside of, like, very deep leagues or AL only that you should be stashing him. Alex, do you have any thoughts on Bregman?
Other than that, he's great. Not really. No, I agree. I don't think he... It just seems like the Astros aren't putting in a concerted effort to accommodate him this season. And I think they're playing more the long game with him. And I think he will marinate at AAA probably until September. And even if he comes up in September, I don't know if he's going to play an especially prominent role. So in redraft leagues, I'm not really thinking about him. In dynasty, absolutely. But no, not in redraft.
I kind of think he's pushing the issue more than, well, obviously they didn't expect him to come out hitting like this, but I don't think they expected the power to be like this. And he's kind of pushing the issue and getting all the media hype. And I don't think they were anticipating him even being in the picture for this year. Does it, you know what I mean? And I think that's kind of what's happening right now. And I agree with that with Alex. I don't think he's in the plans this year until maybe late in the year.
I mean, he's not even on the 40-man roster, so that says something too. So they would have to designate someone, and that's been one of the issues with AJ Reed, is they really like everybody on their 40-man roster, and they didn't want to have to designate someone. So, but you know, and they've already had to do it once for AJ Reed. Are they going to do it again this season before rosters expand in September? I don't think so. Mike, what are your thoughts?
The logical side of me wants to say what you guys are saying, which it's probably not going to happen. And, you know, there's a lot going against him for him to get a major league call up at some point. The illogical part of me wants to say, well, since he's been promoted to AAA, he's batting .389. He has 5 home runs in only 8 games. He went to the Futures game and was possibly the best player on the field other than the error he made at shortstop, but almost hit for the cycle at the Futures game. I'm just so excited about the guy. I want him to be up as soon as possible. I think that, like, AJ Reed, if he continues to slump, which, you know, the Astros in the past have been a team that kind of give 150 plate appearance tryouts almost. And, you know, they did that with Tyler White earlier on. They kind of did it with Singleton last year at first base. And if Reed continues on the path of being kind of just middling for another, you know, what, month or so, I could definitely see them sending him back down and then bringing Bregman up and then moving, you know, Marwin Gonzalez already plays first base against right hand or against left-handers. So, you know, you could definitely see Valbuena move over to first and then Bregman go over to third. I think as fantasy owners, it doesn't matter about what position he plays. What we want to look for is when he gets when he starts getting some third base time, because if he does get promoted, that's when he would get the majority. That's when he would possibly get promoted, is if he was playing third base and if they swapped him over to play some games there. So the logical part of me says, no, he's probably not going to get promoted sometime soon. But it's such a great story. The illogical part of me wants him to come up as soon as possible.
I think you've made a really great point. I think if you see him starting to play third base at AAA, you need to jump on it immediately.
Yeah. The question, though, you made, Justin, was, is he worth stashing in mixed leagues? I think in 15-team leagues or larger, he's worth a stash. In AO only, he's certainly worth a stash. But in 12-team mixers, there's definitely better guys to have.
All right. Let's move on to the next guy. We're running a little bit long. We still got a bunch of guys to kind of cover. So we'll have a quick discussion on Tyler Duffy, who's been hot as of late. Is this a guy worth picking up, Mike?
I don't really care for him, to be honest with you. He's not somebody that I particularly like. I think he's a streamer in shallow leagues, and in AL only, he's the type of guy that you can use for now, but could easily, you know, get set down or even be DFA'd at some point if they decide to bring Berrios up, or they just don't, you know, care for him anymore. But you know, I'd say he might last the rest of the season, but he's not anything special.
Matt, do you agree with Mike, or are you taking a different route here?
I agree with Mike. I think he's just a hot guy right now, hot pitcher. But I have a anti-bias against kind of command control guys, and that's kind of what he is, 90-mile-an-hour guy. I always go for the higher upside guys. But in a 12-14-team league, he is a home streamer, even though he's pitched better on the road of late. But, yeah, I'm not very excited about Duffy. Sorry.
Alex, are you in agreement on Tyler Duffy? Is this a guy you'd be willing to pick up right now?
No, I'm in disagreement. I am in disagreement with Duffy. I wouldn't pick him up, and I probably, you know, maybe he is worth looking at in like a 12-team league. He kind of reminds me of a little bit of like a Kyle Hendricks guy. I guess the command control that Matt referenced. I think he has some value, and it's not like his strikeout rate isn't anything intolerable either. I mean, he does a good job at base runner control and base runner management. He's just suffering through a pretty poor strand rate and an excruciatingly bad home run to fly ball rate right now. But his xFIP, 3.88, 3.64 last year, that'll do even in like 10-team mixed leagues. It's not great, but if you're thinking about a streamer in a 12-team league or even a 14-team league, I mean, I think he's worth owning in a 14 or 15-team league. So if you're streaming him in 12, I think that's fine. Yeah, stream him at home, stream him against weak lineups, but I think he'll work his way into a legitimate starting pitcher conversation as soon as the ERA falls towards something more tolerable.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. I think he's a streamer in kind of 12, 15-team leagues. I think he's more appropriate, to me at least, for DFS formats. If you're in daily fantasy, if you see he's got a good matchup in a nice park at home or on the road in a nice park, then I think he's a guy I would target as a cheap option in DFS. Season long, I just don't trust a guy with his kind of poor fastball to hold up. And so I think he's a guy that can get bombed on occasion and give up too many home runs because he doesn't have a very good fastball and is so kind of dependent on the control and command to pull him through. So he's not a guy that I think I'll end up using outside of deeper formats as a streamer, but I think in DFS he's a guy that, you know, especially in a GPP type format where we're trying to win a big amount and go against the grain, he could be a guy to target with nicer matchups. Let's move on and talk about Josh Bell and Tyler Glasnow. Both were called up recently by the Pirates. Glasnow's already been sent back down, but Josh Bell had a pretty amazing impact, and I really thought, in spite of what the numbers said, that Glasnow's start was actually really, really nice and very encouraging. Mike, what are your thoughts on Glasnow and Josh Bell moving forward for the rest of this year?
Well, yeah, I think everybody that's listened to this knows my thoughts on Glass now. I am a big fan, and I also agree with you, Justin. If you watch the start, you know, a lot of those runners were inherited and, you know, ended up scoring after he was already out of the game. Mm-hmm. Not to say
two of the four were inherited, were given up by the relief pitcher.
Yeah, so, and not to say that those runs wouldn't have scored anyways, but regardless, you know, some of that wasn't on him necessarily. So at least for the rest of the year, he's an obvious hold in pretty much any league that you have him. I'd say in 10 team, if you're in need of the roster spot to stream, then I guess that's fine, but I still wouldn't do it. He's a hold everywhere. For Josh Bell, man, like, he's impressed me. He's had some really big at bats lately. You know, I mean, he hasn't played a lot, which is unfortunate. And in terms of fantasy, he's not somebody that we can rely on. I think in NL only, he's definitely worth, you know, an add. And even in deeper mix, I wouldn't even say 15 teams, maybe even deeper than that. He's worth an add because I think that, you know, the power, while it's been improved this year, it's not somebody that in those type of, like, I'd rather own a Logan Morrison just because, you know, he's going to play every day. And, you know, while the upside isn't that immense, he's still somebody that's going to, you know, add productivity to you. But in terms of NL only, I certainly think he's worth an add. I don't think he's going to play too much. He probably will get sent down soon. But in terms of long term, you know, keeper leagues and dynasty leagues, he's certainly ready. And I think next year we're going to be looking at a guy that can certainly be a top 20 first baseman overall, and, you know, is making strides to be better in the power department, which has always been kind of what people have been worried about with him. So I am very high on both of them. Josh Bell more for next year, but Glass now I think will definitely have a big impact in the second half.
Alex, what are your thoughts on these two Pittsburgh Pirates prospects?
Yeah, that's about right on both. I'm not as high on Glass, no, but we'll start with Bell. I don't think he's going to see a whole lot of time. I'm glad to see that the power came through, because at first it seemed like his only calling card might be batting average, but it looks like he's rounding out pretty nicely. He's only 23. I think as soon as they give him an extended, you know, an extended cup of tea, so to speak, he's going to stick. I think he's going to be just fine. But until, you know, this year, I don't think he's going to contribute much. Glasnow, I think if I had to put like a contemporaneous comp on him, I would say Lance McCullers, not by stuff, but just by results, in that he'll strike out maybe 11 per nine. That's a lot, but like 10 per nine, but also walk like 4 or 4.5 per nine, maybe like a Carlos Rodon kind of situation. His stuff is filthy, but the control really concerns me. And if it's not working at AAA, it's not going to work at the major league level either. That's not absolute, but, you know, generally speaking, those kinds of things translate pretty well, for better or for worse. So he'll have his really good starts. I think he's going to have some really bad starts. There's definitely going to be growing pains, but he's worth owning if he sticks around this year. I'm just a little reluctant to send him out there every day or every 5 days.
Matt, what are your thoughts on these Pittsburgh Pirates prospects?
Well, I'll start with Glass now. I really, really like what I watched the game against the Cardinals. What you guys are alluded to, he pitched better than the numbers say. The inherited runners, they might have scored. He gave up the home run to Grichuk, but I mean, the stuff is nasty. You can see a little bit of the fastball command issues. The dude has been the gold standard at limiting offensive production against him in the minor leagues. His batting average against the last couple seasons are ridiculous. It's about you're paying more for a tank of gas now, or for a gallon of gas, but. The biggest thing for me in redraft formats is he's going to hit the innings limit soon. He's at 100 innings now. Last year he threw 109. The year before that he threw 124. So you got to think maybe he's got another 40 innings left. That's being conservative probably, but with the way Pittsburgh's starting rotation has struggled lately, maybe they're willing to push it a little more. But maybe 40 innings, which, what, five starts? Four or five starts left? Or, well, five starts, six starts maybe? I can't do math, sorry. but
it depends on how many innings it goes per start.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. You got to think maybe five or six starts left for Glass now, which it's going to be productive starts, but you got to anticipate maybe one or two of them being blow-up outings just because the command isn't where it needs to be yet. As far as Josh Bell, I am probably the low guy here. I am encouraged by the power uptick. I really am. But I don't think the stick is big enough for anything other than a corner infield spot. For me personally, I think at the very best, if he was to get playing time from here on out, I don't think you can expect him to be any better than a league average hitter. And as a first baseman, I mean, that's not the most ideal fantasy player. Projection system likes him. They got him at 280. I could see that. And Seamer's got him about 280. I think that's fair, but they don't. I mean, it doesn't believe in the power. I don't either. But I mean, it is improved. It is worth noting. He's always been a high BABIP guy too, so that's nice to know. He hits the snot out of the ball. He's an athletic kid. He used to play the outfield. Struggle in playing defense at first base, and that seems to be the problem as far as a lot of the playing time issues. They don't trust. He's really bad at first base. He's made, looking for the error total here. Too many errors for first base, I'll tell you that. But I'm not crazy for either one of these guys. I guess if it's pick one, it's Glass now, because I think he's got the rotation spot for now. And I'm not that high on Bell. In an OBP format, I could see sticking him in there because he will walk a lot and build some value there. But I think as far as actual hitting ability, I think he's going to hit toward the bottom of the order, just a younger guy, and I don't think the bat is any more than league average, which is good.
Yeah, you are definitely the low guy on Bell, because I think there's more power coming.
Sure.
And so
I
don't.
Might not now. I'm talking redraft. I mean, you might not see it now. Is what I'm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. League average now. I think is fair.
I think his ultimate ceiling could be what like Eric Hosmer did last year.
I was literally about to say Eric Hosmer as a comp.
I think Eric Hosmer is. I think I wrote about that in this winter, and when I did the prospect pieces, I wrote Hosmer 2015 is probably the realistic comp for Bell. But I kind of tagged it as a ceiling. I think the power's growing a little bit more from that now. But I don't see Bell. If Bell has a 25 homer season, I'll be shocked. I don't think I think he has it in the bat.
And I agree with you guys in terms of for this season. I don't know how much value he has. It seems like Matt said that they are not very happy with his defense, and they seem content just running John Jaso out there. I mean, Jaso could move to the outfield, but I mean, they've got three amazing outfielders. Like, who were they going to sit for John Jaso if they were to move him to the outfield? So I just don't think there's an opening at the moment for Josh Bell. Glass now. I'm a little bit more encouraged by his prospects for this season than you are, Matt. I think he could get another 50 to 60 innings, which, you know, gives them eight more starts. I've been saying all along I'd prefer Glass now over Giolito rest of the way. I'm standing by that. I was encouraged by the outing, by watching the outing against the Cardinals, who are a very good offense. And he really kept them in check until late in the game. So he I think, is going to have a pretty nice impact rest of the way for fantasy owners. I'm holding on tight if I've got him. And trying to buy low on him if people just look at the stat line and go, ooh, this isn't going to be good for Glass now.
I think in quality star formats, he's worth more. He has more name value than worth for the rest of the season.
Yes, that is fair. In a wins format, he definitely has more value than he does in a quality start format, because there are definitely times where he may only go five and two thirds or something like that. Let's move on to Jose Reyes real quick and talk about him, because he's had three home runs since being acquired and started by the Mets, and it's looking like he is, you know, somewhat of his old self, and he's still kind of getting his feet wet. But is Jose Reyes a guy that could be counted on in fantasy rest of the way, Matt?
I don't think so. He needs another injury to happen to the Mets infield, I think, and he needs to run more. I'm disappointed by the stolen bases. He's only attempted. I mean, I know it's really, really small sample since he's been up with the Mets, but he's only ran once and he got thrown out. I don't think he's going to hit enough. For obviously the power is not sustainable. I don't think three more home runs the rest of the way, to be honest with you. I'm not a big Reyes guy. Never really have been. I don't think so. No.
Alex, what are your thoughts on Jose Reyes moving forward?
Yeah, I didn't even know why you guys had him on the topics to begin with. I didn't know he hit three home runs, and
two in one day. The day I made this list.
Wow. I honestly couldn't care less about Reyes. I don't think he's going to. I mean, he's only good for stolen bases. If you were one of those owners who got those three home runs, then good for you. He is probably only good for three more on the way. And you know, really what you bank on for Jose Reyes at this point is speed, and he's only attempted one stolen base in 26 plate appearances, which is a small sample, but that's entirely at his own volition. He has a 308 on base percentage, so he's had more than, you know, just one, sorry, more than one opportunity to steal a bag. He's getting older. I think this is kind of a washed up play here. I don't think he's worth our time.
I mean, he's only attempted one stolen base so far being up. He's only been on and stuck on first base three times so far.
Oh, true, because he hit home runs. Okay.
Yeah, because he hit home in two doubles. So I mean, it's a really, really small sample size. I think he will run. I think they're going to have to give him some playing time at some point with David Wright being out. Wilmer Flores should not be manning shortstop ever. And so, I mean, I think they're going to find him, going to find ways to get. I believe he played some outfield in the minor leagues during his kind of his minor league assignment. So I think they're going to find ways to get him in the lineup. I think that he is rosterable, especially in like a 15-team league. You know, it may be a little slow going at first, but I think as he kind of reacclimates back to the major leagues, I think we will see something. He hit well in the minor leagues for Colorado before being traded over to the being DFA'd and then signing with the Mets. I think this is actually a sneaky pickup guy in deeper formats. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I really respect Matt and Alex, but I think it's crazy just to write him off. I understand all of the history, and if you just don't want to pick him up because of what he's done, I completely understand that too. Fantasy is a game for fun, and if you feel like you're a shitty person for picking up a guy like Jose Reyes, I completely get it. But skills wise, like he's let off every single game that they've played him, and he's actually played in each of the last six games or so that he's been involved in. He has hits in four of those six. He has, like you guys have already mentioned, three home runs, and the other, you know, two of those hits were extra base hits, doubles. So, you know, I understand why he hasn't, you know, gotten stolen base opportunity a lot of them yet, because he hasn't been on first base like you guys have already mentioned. But, you know, when you look at the shortstop landscape, you know, I really don't. Are you going to be banking on Eduardo Nunez to continue what he's done in the second half of the year? Are you going to be, you know, buying Elidmys Diaz for the rest of the year to continue what he's doing? Trevor Story has already fallen off. You know, Elvis Andrews, Didier Gregorius, like these are all guys that like Jose Reyes could easily, you know, surpass in the second half, and he's going to get the playing time. David Wright and Lucas Duda aren't anywhere close to coming back, and you know, they didn't get Reyes for nothing. And like I said, he's already been leading off every single game. He's going to play a prominent role for them. He has stolen 20 plus bases in each of the last however many years that he's been healthy. I feel like he is definitely a worthwhile pickup in deeper leagues, and possibly a middle infield option in 12-team leagues.
I was just gonna say, I was being like somewhat facetious. I mean, obviously you don't write him off, because he'll probably steal like 10-12 bases the rest of the season, which is gonna be up there with the best of them. It's just always like, it just seems like such empty production. It's going to be like a 260 batting average, and you have to wait on that stolen base like every sixth day or something like that. Maybe even, you know, maybe more than that, every 10th day. So it always pains me to roster someone like that who's really, his only calling card is speed. I don't think he's going to hit much more. It's nice that he is leading off, and I think he might be rosterable in 10 team formats, yeah. Honestly. I just don't think he's like, he's, you know, he is what he used to be.
No.
And obviously with all this shit that's going on around him, it's not ideal as well.
All right, let's do a quick would you rather with Jose Reyes before we move on to our last guy. Would you rather rest of the season Jose Reyes or Zach Cozart?
Reyes.
Cozart.
Alex?
Reyes, I guess. Do I have to?
Jose Reyes or your boy Jose Ramirez?
Oh, Ramirez.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's really tough. I'll go with Reyes because I think he's got a better path to regular playing time.
I mean, so does Ramirez.
I think Ramirez does, because he can play so many different positions. So I'm going with Ramirez.
I will go with Ramirez, but it's extremely close.
All right, Didi Gregorius, who's been very hot as of late.
I'm going Gregorius.
It's tough, man. I'll take Didi.
Yeah, Didi.
Who'd you want to have? Cozart, Justin. Who'd you take?
I think I'm taking. That's hard, man. I was Kozar was my sleeper, and he's been so up and down
he's
this
sleeping.
Year. Yeah, well, but he's got 14 home runs this season. No, yeah, so I mean,
I was just kidding.
I'm gonna take Reyes over Kozar and Gregorius because I don't know what either of those lineups in New York, the Yankees, or Cincinnati are gonna look like after the trade deadline. Yeah, so I think the run scored. And RBIs may be an issue in those lineups.
Well, and Reyes, like I said, I mean, he's going to continue to lead off, and Gregorius, his lineup position is always a question mark. It's usually sixth or seventh. I think they bumped him up to sixth, a couple days ago, so maybe he sticks there. But, do we really believe that he's going to hit 20 or more home runs this year, Gregorius? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's move on to the last guy we're going to talk about, and that's Adam Wainwright, who pitched against Glass now. In Glasnow's debut and looked very, very good. I was very encouraged by what I saw. Matt, you are the resident Cardinals homer. What are your thoughts on Wainwright rest of the way?
Well, I need to apologize for burying the man earlier in the season. I thought he was done with the fastball command was not existent. The velocity was a tick down. I figured coming off of a non-arm injury that it'd be better, but he's proved me wrong to this point. Last 10 starts, you're looking at 60 strikeouts and 16 walks, which is not quite vintage Wainwright, but it's there. 65 innings, 60 strikeouts is playable. I know there's a lot of higher K upside guys out there, but Wainwright has been pretty strong lately. The fastball command is helping him use the curveball more, and that was the problem. He couldn't command the fastball, and then in turn couldn't set people up with the curveball, and now the fastball command is there, and it's the curveball has been better, and the offense behind him has been pretty good. He's getting a lot of run support in his last couple outings. I mean, last couple starts anyways, he has. He's been one of the lucky ones. But, yeah, I buried him too early, and I guess I should apologize to Mr. Wainwright.
All right. Alex, what are your thoughts on Wainwright rest of the way?
Yeah, same. I buried him a little too early, too. I didn't give up on him entirely just because of his track record. I don't think you can give up on someone like that entirely. But, no, I like him. I mean, he's back to his 2014 level, essentially, just with an atrocious strand rate. The ground ball skills aren't quite there, and, you know, maybe he's a little more hittable, but he can still be, like, easily a top 50 pitcher the rest of the way, maybe top 40 or top 30. I'm reluctant to go that high with him because he just doesn't have the upside that everyone else does. But, I mean, vintage Wainwright, even if it's just a slightly faded version of that, was still really valuable. And I think he's worth buying low on because at a 4.49 ERA right now, he's still technically a buy low to the people who have just been sitting on him all year waiting for him to come back, and maybe they're just not paying attention. You could probably go out and get him right now for, you know, half price.
This is the perfect guy you trade Matt Harvey for.
Yeah.
He's
a guy that, if you just take a cursory look at kind of his stats that most people will just look at if you're not looking at the underlying stuff, you're going to see that 4.49 ERA. And be scared by it. But I think this is one of those few scenarios where this late in the season there are buy low guys as the trade deadline in fantasy approaches. Mike, what is your thoughts on Wainwright rest of the way?
Yeah, you guys mentioned apologizing to Wainwright. You should apologize to me because I got laughed off this podcast when I did nothing but say that Wainwright was going to be fine in the long run. And he has been. I mean, Matt kind of touched on it. You know, since May 18th, he's put up a 2.89 ERA. The xFIP has been a little bit higher than that. But, Alex also mentioned the ground ball rate. Over the last couple months, if you look at June, it was 46%. And then the first couple starts of July, he sat over 54%. I mean, we're seeing incremental improvements as the season has gone on. His strikeout rate the last couple of months has been over 9 per 9. and the control has been solid as well. I mean, I'm in. I was in before, and I'm definitely in now. Surely the window to buy has certainly closed a bit, and I think people, especially that have him that have kind of rode it the whole time, are certainly not going to sell him now. But you might be able to, buy a bit lower on him now, even though he's pitched, better over the last, couple months. I still think that there's some people that just don't believe. But I think we're going to see a nice top 40 starter the rest of the way.
One minor thing that's worth noting is the Cardinals shuffled their defensive alignment and their infield around, and their infield defense has been way better since, and that helps him out a lot.
Yeah, he also hasn't allowed a home run since May 28th.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, that is kind of a big thing. So, maybe there's a little bit of regression from what we've seen in the last month and a half, 2 months from him. But I think he still is a guy to target in trade talks, especially with people in your league that may not look at kind of the underlying statistics or breaking up the season in terms of, since May, since the middle of May, he's been fantastic. So this is definitely a guy that I'm going to target in a number of leagues as a kind of buy low opportunity. That is going to wrap us up tonight. Alex, why don't you tell people again where you can be reached on Twitter, and then give yourself a few more plugs.
Okay. My Twitter handle is Dolph Haldhagen, which is spelled DolphHaldhagen. I regret making that. A couple of plugs. You can find me at Fangraphs. You can find me at RotoBaller. You can find me on Twitter. That's about it. I don't have cable, so I don't watch TV that often. That's about it. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. Mike, why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. It's a little bit shorter than Alex's, but I'm sure you can find it if you look hard enough. And you can also read my stuff on baseballhq.com. I post a daily matchups column for them on Saturdays. I do a weekly column for friendswithfantasybenefits.com on Wednesdays. I do raise updates for Fantasy Pros pretty much multiple days of the week. Check me out on the DFS podcast with Cameron Miller on Fridays. Matt and I do our prospect podcast on Mondays. And we're going to be getting into some football soon, so be sure to look out for that. Oh, and watch The Night Of on HBO because you need to.
All right, Matt, where can people reach you and what are you working on?
I feel embarrassed. I don't even know what that is.
I don't either.
You don't know what the night. You guys need to catch up on HBO. Like, seriously,
I don't have HBO. I don't have HBO. I don't get to watch Game of Thrones.
Whatever.
Give me your HBO Go contact information and I'll catch up.
I have it. I don't even use it. So how about that? But
that's even worse.
Yeah. I've also never seen Game of Thrones. So or Breaking Bad. So shame me. But whatever.
Oh, well, that's a travesty.
Yeah. Well, you can find me on Twitter at MBTomp24 and don't harass me for not watching TV. I am always updating my prospect stuff and, coming down from the high of watching the Futures game. So just enjoying life and doing all that.
And then you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read my football stuff right now is coming out on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. My baseball stuff, for the most part, is headed over to Rotographs, which is the fantasy side of Fangraphs, where Alex writes as well. I cover the AL-only outfielders over there, and then I just write random stuff when I'm not doing that once a month. I do have an article coming out tomorrow for us, but it'll actually be yesterday by the time you're hearing this podcast, for the Hardball Times, covering the Sonoma Stompers and their inclusion of women on their professional baseball organization. They're an independent league team in Northern California. I spent a couple days covering them and talking to the women and wrote something up for the Hardball Times. So definitely go check that out. I think it's a pretty thought-provoking piece. So it's a piece I'm very, very proud of, and I'm looking forward to hearing everybody's feedback from. So other than that, football's coming up soon. We'll have some more football content on the website, and the podcast should be starting up here in the next week or so. For Mike, Alex, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the tip. fairly well.
Yeah, he's a good, he's a really good guess.
Yeah, he's really, really smart.
I was gonna be a smart ass and say, if Andrew Benintendi was in the National League, where would you rank him? I'm sure he gets comments like that all the time.
So. Well, we get comments all the time, like you know, because I do the AL side, and I always get like, where's Bryce Harper? I'm like, oh god damn it, read the goddamn title of the
piece.
He's
not in the AL, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, all the time. Where's Curtis Granderson? Like, oh my god. Like, you know, and
I'm going to slice you with a razor blade.
Yeah, people are absolutely atrocious on those comment boards too.
I can imagine.
Ooh. There was a 7-inning no hitter in the minor leagues today.
There was one 2 days ago, I think, too.
And none of these.
Oh, the Rays, Double A team.
Yeah, this was in, I don't know, who were the Biscuits?
Montgomery Biscuits. That's the Tampa Bay team for Tampa, yeah. Did they throw one against the Biscuits?
They threw another one today.
Oh, for the Biscuits. Who was it?
Yep. Steve Asher, Jared Mortensen, Jordan Harrison, and
Kyle Winkler.
I know Asher a little bit. I don't know
I don't know any of those names.
Mortensen's like a 30-year-old dude in Double A. That's all I know.
I know Ryan Stanek looks like a big pile of poop yesterday.
Yeah, I don't even know why he was there. He was kind of a weird guy to be in the futures game. But
because he can throw 100 sometimes.